jacket as I can take here. Before the service, I had to agree with John LaSalle. I said he'd take his coat off when I took mine. In fact, he and I are the only two people here that actually wore it. There we go. Now we're all properly attired. On the back cover of Kate Braestrup's book, Here If You Need Me, is a line from the text that reads, "If anyone needs proof that God has a sense of humor, here it is. I am a middle-aged mother of four who works primarily with young, fit men, and I, a famously loquacious person, have a job that requires me mostly to just show up, shut up, and be." Reverend Braestrup is writing about those times when you're in the presence of someone who has just experienced a very devastating loss. Usually of a loved one, sometimes a child. Perhaps it's one of those inexplicable tragedies when one of life's absurdities sneaks up and snares someone close to you. Our natural inclination in such situations, because after all we are kind, well-meaning, good-hearted people, is to reach for just the right words that will ease the pain, or do something that will somehow fix the matter. You certainly don't have to be a minister to experience and struggle with this. Most, if not all of us, have had friends who needed our care and our comfort and our love at some very extreme moments in their lives. And many of us have had, of course, our times as well, when we have needed the care, the comfort, the love of others. Part of my experience in reading this book was that of simply being reminded, once again, of the importance and the power of just plain human presence, and how much healing and hope can be offered when we can teach ourselves to show up, shut up, and be. Kate Braestrup is a Unitarian Universalist minister. The primary part of her ministry is being a chaplain with the Maine Warden Service. This is the state agency that attends to the care, the protection, and the preservation of Maine's lakes, rivers, and vast wilderness areas. But Kate's job is not to follow the game wardens around, blessing lakes, rivers, trees, and the occasional moose. These things have no need of the blessings of human beings anyway, and could get along just as well. We could make that better without us. Part of the job of the Maine Warden Service, however, is to conduct search and rescue and recovery operations for persons who get lost in those vast acreages of lakes, rivers, and trees, and sometimes fail to return alive, fall through thin ice and drown, or lose their life in a rushing stream they were not adequately prepared to navigate. She ministers to the families who are on the receiving ends of these kinds of losses, and also with the game wardens, who, hale and hearty and self-assured as they may be, primarily, as she says, young, very fit men, they also have to deal with their own emotions and their fears, and there's sometimes feelings of inadequacy as they conduct their rescue and, more often than not, their recovery operations. I've not met Kate Braestrup, although we do share some common geographical territory. I'm going to work on this, I can get her to come and speak here sometime in the course of our next church year, our 2009-10 church year. Because her book is a very personal one. Personal to the point that I almost backed out of doing a sermon on it, since I know that hearing what she has to say out of her own experience and out of her own heart will be much more powerful than my giving a secondhand rendition of it, which is what I'm trying to do today. But at the same time, I found some very wonderful teachings in this book, some of which I do want to pass along to you in the hope that at some point in the future we can hear from Reverend Braestrup herself. She lives in Lincolnville, Maine. I just noted that she and I share a common piece of geography. As many of you know, my first landing point as a UU parish minister was with the First Universalist Church of Rockland, Maine. And that was the church that Kate and her husband Drew and their four children began attending about 8 to 10 years after I left there in 1984, which is right after Gordon was born. Kate, Drew, and the kids lived in Thomaston. It's a town just south of Rockland as you're taking Route 1 up the coast. By then, Ms. Braestrup had had a very brief try at medical school before then having a go at a career in writing. She published a novel in 1990 called Onion, which I think was loosely based on her experience in med school. And she's done some freelance magazine work along with bringing those 4 children into the world. Her husband, Drew, was a Maine State police officer. He became quite taken with Unitarian Universalism after they joined the Rockland Church. In fact, in time, Drew considered preparing for the UU ministry itself, which would have made kind of an interesting career change for him. But maybe not all that much, because he had this idea that he could combine parish ministry with that of being a police chaplain. Well, those plans, along with a host of other things, horribly came to an end on a Monday morning in April of 1996, when Drew's police cruiser, in which he was driving alone, was rammed by a large truck whose driver had lost control, and he was killed instantly. Sometime after her husband's death, Kate chose to take up the call to ministry herself. She somehow managed to juggle the demands of raising 4 children with also going to Bangor Theological Seminary. As a side note here, that seminary is located a few blocks from Stephen King's house. You can make of that whatever you might. She did her internship at the UU Church in Rockland, which also ordained her. My friend and colleague and one of my successor ministers with that congregation, the Reverend Rolf Gerhardt, was her supervisor and mentor, and Rolf was also the one whom I visited up there. We all visited up there a little over a year ago. He put this book in my hand and said, "You got to read this." And I did, and he was right. A couple more things about the book before I finally get into it. It was named one of Time Magazine's top 10 nonfiction books for 2007. And 1 year ago this month, Reverend Braestrup was awarded our Unitarian Universalist Association's Melcher Book Award for Here If You Need Me. This is an award that is given annually by our association to an author whose work in the judgment of the awards panel best addresses some aspect or concern of liberal religion. One need not be, and one is usually not, a Unitarian Universalist, much less a UU minister, to receive this award. And very often it addresses sort of larger topical issues that we also address here through our Social Justice Committee. This time the Melcher people took a much more personal approach in giving Kate the award. Part of the citation that she was read at the award ceremony said, "Your story, told with unflinching courage, piercing insight, and just the right dose of irreverent humor, has been a blessing to your readers and a gift to our liberal religious movement." As I've been saying, this is an intensely personal book, but it's also one with universal touch points. In one way or another, many of us have been where she goes. Maybe not to some of the extreme lengths that she describes, but in our having to face in our own ways many of the ultimate questions and challenges that Kate and her fellow Gaydon Wardens face. The book actually begins on a happy note. She's called to go with some Gaydon Wardens as they search for a lost child who had wandered away from a remote campsite just in those few fleeting moments before her parents realize that she's gone. Even as the parents are bracing themselves, to whatever extent that's possible, for the loss of their young daughter, as Kate sits with them while the search goes on, the little girl is found, alive and unharmed. Kate's ministry in this instance is to share and the joy and the relief with these parents that she has been sitting with in fearful expectation. Most of the other stories told here, though, do not have such happy endings. Reverend Braestrup goes from telling how she and her children experienced and struggled to come to terms with the death of her husband and their father, to then describing her encounters with other families and loved ones who are experiencing similarly devastating losses. And the thing that still baffles me as I read this book through is what an upbeat and uplifting book it is. You read about all this horrible stuff, but she's writing it in such a way that you want to keep going because the kind of spirit that comes through there is quite amazing. Some of it, as just noted too, comes from that right dose of irreverent humor that was cited in the Melcher Book Award ceremony. For Kate knows how humor, if handled in just the right and sometimes just a very delicate kind of a way, can have a healing effect even in the most dire of circumstances. In recounting the aftermath of her husband's death, for example, she writes, "You think you're okay. Then some sweet voice crooner starts singing of loss in a minor key, and you aren't just leaking water from your eyes, you're down on the floor, and grief is a splintery thing the size of a telephone pole shoving its way through your chest. My advice? Listen to classical music, preferably Baroque." And then at a later point she says, "Eventually my heart, my fragile glass heart, would again be offered to the mortal hands of another man. Guaranteed to break it in one way or another, since that is the lunacy and the loveliness of love." She has since remarried, acquired two more children in the process, even as her older ones are now on their way out of the nest. I'm going to leave the rest of her stories for you to read, should you wish to do so on your own. I'm sorry we don't have any more of the books here. I've just got this one, and it's mine. Like practically every other book out there, you can get this one on Amazon or through Barnes & Noble or through our UUA bookstore. I'm going to devote the rest of what I have to say this morning as to why I consider this book, in the language of the Melcher Book Award citation, to be a gift to our liberal religious movement. The thing that kept jumping out at me as I was reading this, and naturally enough, I'm reading it through my UU minister eyes, it was how Reverend Braestrup has her ministry, by and large, with people who are not Unitarian Universalists and, for the most part, have never even heard of us. All of her congregants, if they can be called that, all her congregants know is that they're in a situation where in some way that they usually cannot even define or identify themselves, they're in a situation where they feel the need for someone who has something to do with religion. From atheists to fundamentalists and all points in between, she is there if they need her. And I like the way she titled the book. It's here if you need me, not here because you need me. She doesn't make those kinds of assumptions. In such circumstances, though, she has found that she needs ways of speaking about God that does not violate the integrity of her own beliefs while also meaningfully reaching out to those who are reaching out to her. And I've been there a number of times myself. She does this very well, I feel. Kate found Unitarian Universalism and then pursued the UU ministry with very little religious baggage from her upbringing. Her family of origin, as she tells it, was largely a-religious, not a particularly religious family at all. She has one chapter in here which she relates with a characteristic blend of humor and troublesomeness about how, as a teenager, she went with a friend to a born-again revival meeting. I'll leave that one for you to read as well. So being more or less religiously unencumbered, she was free to pursue her own ways of understanding and speaking of God. She dismisses, as do I, a God of causality. That is to say, a supreme being who can cause certain events to happen or not happen. On a rainy search mission where she is present, one of the game wardens asks her, kind of jokingly, but still asks her, if she can get God to do something about the rain so make their search a little easier. Her response is, "I'm a Unitarian Universalist. We don't do weather." On a less whimsical note, though, she recounts a conversation with a seminary classmate, a very nice Baptist classmate, as she's described, to whom Kate acknowledges she would not be pursuing the ministry had it not been for the death of her husband. The classmate says, "See, God knew what he was doing all along. I'm going to read you where she goes with that. This sort of remark, which however common, makes me despair of Christianity's ability to respond in any helpful or sensible way to the reality of death. I retorted in what was probably an unnecessarily icy voice, "Surely God was not so urgently in need of Unitarian Universalist ministers that he needed to kill a father of four in order to make one." The thing I get from this passage is, here is a very kind, caring, and compassionate woman who you still do not want to tick off. Well, debunking a God who causes things, though, is really sort of the clearing away point. That's how she clears away the trees in order to make a place for a God to whom she can meaningfully relate and share. Once again, I'm going to let her words speak for themselves as she tells how she and her children tried to come to terms with the death of her husband and their father when it came to questions of God. My children asked me, "Why did Dad die?" I told them, "It was an accident." There are small accidents, like knocking over your milk at the dinner table, and there are large accidents, like the one your dad was in. Nobody meant it to happen. It just happened. And his body was too badly damaged in the accident for his soul to stay in it anymore, and he died. God does not spill milk. God did not bash the truck into your father's car. Nowhere in Scripture does it say God is a car accident or God is death. God is justice and kindness and mercy and always, always love. So if you want to know where God is in this or in anything else, look for love. For Reverend Bracegirdle, God is the presence and the power and the force of justice and kindness and caring and most of all love. These are eternal qualities that persons of any or no specific faith are called upon to embody, to incarnate, to make flesh. As a point of theology, I know this concept of God could be argued, as can practically all things theological, for that matter. But I'm going to read just a bit further as to where she goes from that passage after she tells about being with a game warden sitting in their car or their truck after he has had to pull a young girl who was drowned out of a lake, a very icy lake. The name she uses here for the game warden, she says she did change some of the names. The name she uses here for the game warden is Frank. The death of the little girl with the red mittens is not Frank, is not God's will or plan. It's physics and biology, the bearing capacity of frozen water, the point at which hypothermia causes a small body's systems to fail. Do not look for God in the breaking ice or the dark water. "Have you called home?" I asked Frank. "Yeah," Frank answers. "I told my wife to give the grandkids extra smoochies good night from their old puppy. They've been staying the night a lot with us lately." Together we looked through the windshield. We looked for a long time, easily 10 minutes, before he finished the thought. "The thing is, I don't know what I would do if one of my girlies was killed," he says at last. "I'm too old. I don't think I could stand it." Frank has two granddaughters, ages 6 and 8. I move my hand over toward him. I don't actually touch him. I just put my hand closer to him on the back seat, next to the packet of the hand warmer on top of the extra blaze orange hat he'd loan me because I forgot mine. "It would be hard," I say. He nods, stares out the window. I couldn't bear it. "People would help you," I tell him. He knows it's true. We ourselves are proof of that. Then she cuts to where she's giving a talk to ministers at a breakfast sometime later. "I'm willing to have a theodicy conversation with a cop, any cop, faithful or faith-free, not because he arrives at my answer, but because he's had to look suffering right in the face. I say to the clergy breakfast. Whatever words he uses for God, he is still the one who had to take the little girl's body out of the water and see her face and hear her mother cry. Here's my answer to the theodicy problem in a nutshell. Frank took the girl out from under the ice with his own hands, tried to give her his breath, and his heart broke when he couldn't save her life. Frank is the answer. The theodicy problem, just for the record, is the question or topic of how tragedy and evil can exist if there's also an all-loving and all-powerful God. Kate's apparent answer is that there is no such all-powerful God when it comes who causes either good or bad things to happen. As she's putting it, whatever God there is to be found in the love, the care, and the kindness of those who show forth those things, especially in the face of life's inexplicable tragedies. I will be among the first to agree that one can believe in the power and the presence of justice, kindness, compassion, and love without calling it God. I seldom do myself, as a matter of fact. But there is nothing or no one that says you can't either. Nobody, after all, from the most devout fundamentalist to the most devout atheist, owns the copyright or has the exclusive use rights to the word God. And this gets me to the point I will close on. Some months ago, I made reference to two genres of books that have recently appeared, but I represent, as I've looked at both of them, what I have come to believe is really a false dichotomy when it comes to matters of God. You've got this genre of megachurch ministers like Rick Warren and Joel Osteen, in whose books God is some kind of a variation on Superman, to whom we're supposed to surrender our lives. And then you've got a genre that includes Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, or Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great, in which God is a foolish or dangerous construct that needs to be gotten rid of forthwith. Speaking only for myself, I find each of these genres equally unhelpful when it comes to the religious and spiritual path I seek to walk, and which keeps on winding around even at this point in my life. I keep looking for it. I even find now and then a third way when it comes to belief and non-belief. So in addition to telling a wonderful and powerful and moving story, the Reverend Kate Braestrup offers one of many third ways when it comes to knowing the holy, the divine, and the sacred in our lives and in our world by whatever name we may choose to give it. And for this, she has my heartfelt gratitude.